He would come in the room and he would rip the covers off the bed at 4:30 a.m. in the morning. He's like, get up, do something, clean a toilet, clean a bathroom. You got to make something of yourself because the world does not owe you anything. Leadership is caught and taught. So what are people catching from you? Do they believe you care about them? Do they believe you that they can trust you? Do you give them feedback on what they're doing right instead of what they're doing wrong? You might be the owner. You might sign the check. You're the one that's looking at the margins, but it's the people that actually makes the engine go. How often do you dial into them? How are they doing? Research says 1 minute spent on recognition creates 100 minutes of initiative. Because here's the deal. When you find your brilliance, you find your joy. When you find your joy, you find your voice. And when you find your voice, you find your freedom.
All right, so this is my first ever in-person podcast interview, so it had to be super special. I got to sit down with a good friend of mine, Simon T. Bailey, and he's known for a lot of things, but this video of his that went viral in 2019 with 91 million views gives you an idea of what Simon is about.
By the time a child is 17 years of age, they have heard no 150,000 times and only yes 5,000 times.
Now, this episode isn't just learning about how to be more successful, but it's about how to experience more joy in your life while doing it. Simon T. Bailey is one of the most sought-after speakers in the world. He's trained and coached franchisees and executives of some of the biggest franchisors in the world, like McDonald's, Taco Bell, Marriott, American Express, and the list goes on. He's recognized in Success Magazine alongside names like Tony Robbins, Oprah, Tom Brady, Tim Ferriss, and John Maxwell as one of the top 25 people who will help you change your life. So in this episode, you'll learn how to bring more happiness and fulfillment into your life regardless of your current circumstances. We break down why entrepreneurs struggle and what to do about it. And Simon talks about his journey with entrepreneurship, the failures that he's had, the rejection he's encountered. So you get an insight into his world as well. We also talked about Simon's new book, Resilience at Work, which is a must read. It's absolutely amazing. Now, if you want to buy or grow your franchise in the next 12 months, you should check out our free resources at franchiseempire.com. And if you want to work with me and my team on finding or buying a franchise or resale business, then you can go to franchiseempire.com/check territory and you can schedule a free call to see what's available in your area. The link is also in the description below. With that said, sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Franchise Empire Show. They say Rome wasn't built in a day and building your empire doesn't happen overnight. My name is Tarek Johnson, and owning franchises is what helped me go from employee to employer and start building my empire for my family. So this podcast is for you, the empire builders, for those of you who want to build something that stands the test of time. This is for those of you who are crazy enough to believe that you can make the dream in your head come to life. This podcast is all about bringing you real people who are building real empires so you can get inside their mind and heart and get proven strategies and actionable insights that will catapult you to build, grow, and scale your empire. Awesome. Simon, it's really good to have you, man.
Oh,
welcome.
My friend. Good to see you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So you are the inaugural first in-person
podcast. Oh, my goodness. What?
I'm so pumped. It's so fitting because you and I met, I guess it was like in the middle of COVID, right? Which is crazy. So I was going to do that online summit. I hit you up. You and I are on Zoom. I had to get through the gatekeepers first, you know, because we don't mess around. We don't just let anyone, you know, hop on a Zoom with Simon. And we turned out that we live right down the street from each other.
And our wives have met. We've gone to paint and sip.
Yes.
Together. We painted and drank some wine and
Topgolf.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Cool, man. So congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Resilience at Work, which is really awesome. How many books have you written now?
That's book number 11.
11. Wow. So what drives you to write so many books?
I see and read so many things and I watch so many things and I'll just get a thought. So resilience at work literally hit me at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I got up and I was like, oh my goodness, I got to start writing this down, the whole personality archetypes, because over 21 years, I've worked with almost 2,500 organizations in 54 countries. And after a while, you start to have pattern recognition. You start to see similar themes that come up, even for companies that really break out and do well. So I'm like, okay, I got to write. So I'm already working on two more books.
No.
It's just like, once you write, you keep writing.
Man. And I'm excited to dive into it because, you know, as I started reading through the book, there is one of the kind of archetypes that I resonated with, or at least kind of where I'm at right now. And I was like, oh man, that's kind of, it's interesting to read about it and see yourself through it. I mean, there were a couple where it was like, okay, I can see myself, but like really one where it's like, oh wow, I can really at this stage in life kind of see that's where I'm at. So I'm excited to, you know, dive into that and unpack that. But first I got to ask you, why in the world do you wake up at 3:30 in the morning? What is going on at 3:30 in the morning?
So when I was growing up in Buffalo, New York, my dad was an immigrant from Jamaica. He picked oranges in Mount Dora, Florida, moved up to Perry, New York, where he picked apples. So he was always up early. He would come in the room when my brothers and I were growing up, and he would rip the covers off the bed at 4:30 a.m. in the morning. He's like, get up, do something, clean a toilet, clean a bathroom. You got to make something of yourself because the world does not owe you anything. And I think that's just kind of been embedded in me and my brothers. And even my son, he gets up early and he's always probably 15 to 30 minutes early for anything that we have scheduled. And I know he probably got that from us, but I truly believe the early bird gets the worm. Like, get up, get after it. Don't wait.
Yeah, so true. It's funny because I texted Joss last night and I'm like, you know, we got to make sure we got everything set up for the studio, knowing Simon, he's in a show up like 30 minutes early. So I'm like, we got to be ready by like 9:30. And fortunately you texted me, you're like, hey, I'm going to be there pretty much right on the dot. I was like, all right, cool. You bought us some time. I know how you roll. So, you know, what's cool is that, so preparing for, you know, even though we're friends, still wanted to prepare for, you know, for this podcast. And I went back and watched some of your, you know, some of the talks that you've done. And so what's interesting is to see the switch, right? Who you become on stage, which is incredible. And we'll include somewhere in this some B-roll of you on stage because it's just incredible. And I found myself every time I watch you on stage getting the chills. But just to give some context, like what are some of the companies and organizations that you've talked to? Because you've gone and spoken for some of the biggest franchisors in the world.
Wow. So I was just with McDonald's last week. Had a great time with them. Chick-fil-A has brought me in a few times. Really enjoy working with them. Hilton Hotels. I've been with Yum Brands. In fact, Taco Bell is one of my big, big customers. So excited that they have a new CEO of Taco Wow. Bell. And so, yeah, I've been really fortunate to have repeat business and work with these companies and learn what makes them really great, even though I'm there as certainly as a vendor, as a consultant to serve, but I get to understand why they're so brilliant at what they've done. So Burger King, and I mean, I can go on and on. White Castle. I mean, it's just been fun.
That's
been
incredible.
Really, really fun.
So when you're going in, just to kind of give some context, you're speaking to the franchisees, you're consulting the franchisor. What's happening there? Why are they bringing you in?
Yeah, they either want me to come in and talk to their leadership or their key managers inside the company, and certainly their franchisee owners. And that's always an honor because I did some work for Chick-fil-A and I said, I want to interview like a ton of your folks from all over the country who are on the ground every single day in a Chick-fil-A store. And they say, have at it. So between phone calls, Zoom visits and everything, I got a good snapshot of what makes them great at what they do. And it just really blew me away. So by the time I go and present to them, they know I know them because I've spent times in their stores, almost like a secret shopper. Wow. You know, I'll just show them locations. Okay, is this system consistent? And not just Chick-fil-A, any franchisee. All right, where's the inconsistency? Where's the consistency? How do they treat their folks? I was invited, I'll never forget, last year to go to Toronto to spend time with the top 120 executives of Burger King, Popeyes, and we don't have Tim Hortons here, but Tim Hortons is really big in Canada. Yeah. There's a few starting to come into the United States. And so I actually went to their locations and just as a customer. And when I met with their top 120 executives from all the different brands, I could give them real-time feedback on, here's what I saw, here's what I think you should think about, and oh, by the way, here's a recommendation for you.
What's up, guys? Real quick, I wouldn't be honest if I said this podcast doesn't take a lot of time, effort, and money to put on every week. I do this podcast because I truly want to help you. So if you haven't rated or reviewed the podcast yet, I would be incredibly grateful if you could take less than 30 seconds and do so. Your review will not just help us grow the podcast, but also get this in front of more people who need to hear it. Thanks and enjoy the show. What actually brings us happiness and fulfillment in our career, in our business? Like what unlocks it?
I think what unlocks it is realizing that what you're doing is bigger than you. It's not just about your four no more. It's about how do I make the planet and everybody I work with better? So if you're running a business, you might be the owner. You might sign the check. You're the one that's looking at the margins. But it's the people that actually makes the engine go. How often do you dial into them? How are they doing? Because if you're dialed into them, they're going to be dialed into your customers. But if you're not dialed into them, you're not going to have a great customer satisfaction. Your net promoter scores are going to be in the toilet because people don't feel like they're cared for. So the bigger purpose, the bigger meaning, it's not about me. It's about we. And when you just make that shift, how do I always make it about people? Now, with that said, it's not forgetting about yourself. You need to take care of your mental health, practice self-care, do all of the things to make sure you show up to be 100% full on. But the individuals that look to you for leadership, leadership is caught and taught. So what are people catching from you? Do they believe you care about them? Do they believe you that they can trust you? Do you give them feedback on what they're doing right instead of what they're doing wrong? And those are just some of the things that I've observed. Leaders and individuals who are fulfilled, owners who are fulfilled, because they recognize when I am kind and I'm helping others and I take off the Superman cape and just be in the moment with people, that unlocks people to say, you just saw me. Dr. Maria Music at the University of Michigan says, human beings need three things. They need to be valued, they need to be seen, and they need to be understood. And when you value people, you understand them, and you see them, what happens is it actually benefits you because you're helping them and you're helping yourself. Here's the research. Emory University says, whatever you help someone else, the reward centers in our brain begin to light up, almost as if we have been on the receiving end of the person we just helped.
Wow.
And they call it the helper's high. So if I want fulfillment and purpose, I help someone not because of what I can get from them. It's about what I give to them and who I become in the process when I'm operating with no strings attached. It's this person who moves from I am here to there you are. That person that has that self-awareness, there you are. There you are, Tariq. Wow. Instead of I am here, I have all the answers. That's fulfillment when I move from I am here to there you are.
Man, that's super deep. I remember getting some feedback early on in my career about like the way that I talk to people. And that was a hard lesson to learn. Like,
hey man, like the way that you're the way that you're speaking and showing up, like you're having like it's coming off too intense. Like there's a negative impact there. And so what's interesting to me and what I hear in that is self-awareness. And you talk about that a lot, which is just being aware of what impact that you're having, what energy that you're bringing. And it's something that I've always noticed about you, especially since we've hung out a bunch of times now, is like you always bring the heat. Like you always bring the heat. Like Simon always rolls up. He's smiling, laughing, right? Like you always bring the heat regardless of, I'm sure, how you're feeling or what you're thinking about your business or what stress you're going through. And like people feel that. They remember that. And it's like, so how do you turn on the switch, right? Because it's like you don't want to ignore how you're feeling. You want to be authentic to yourself, but at the same time, you got to be conscious about how you're impacting people. So I guess where's the balance between that? And then how do you like turn on that switch?
I want to be straight up with you. I sometimes don't pay attention to others because I'm in my head. Just being real with you. And I've had to snap myself back into reality that, hey, you know, you just cut that person off, or you weren't kind, or you were in a hurry, right? And I've had to hold myself accountable to recognize everybody's going through something. And if I am not present to the moment, and I could have done something better, what did I just model for my four young adult children who may have been with me, where I'm always telling them, but they're watching what I do. So I've had to be I've had to hold myself accountable to say, okay, you didn't say that right. You know, you can do that better. You know, can you get a do-over?
Yeah.
So I think it's conscious, daily choosing to be present to the moment. How do I show up? And how do I extend a little grace to everyone? Because everybody's dealing with something. You know, research says, according to Gallup, roughly 7 out of 10 people are dealing with depression. They're dealing with anxiety. They're dealing with stress. And who am I to go into a public establishment and add more stress to a person's life? So how do I just be intentional and say, good morning, good afternoon, how are you? That doesn't cost anything. But when I'm very intentional about it, what I also realize, I lower my blood pressure, my stress, because I'll say, how are you? And that might have been the first person who said, how am I doing in that moment? And when I realized, I needed it as much as they may have needed it. So I think it's just being very intentional. And I've had to learn that over time. It did not come easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's funny you talk about modeling and kids, and I think it shows up in the workplace too, as like a leader and an entrepreneur, right? It's the whole, you know, that phrase sometimes, like do as I say and not as I do. Yes. It really needs to be reversed.
Yes.
Funny story behind that. So, I mean, you hung out with us in the family. Uh-huh. You came to the kids' birthday party last year, and so Caleb, you know, we have the baby gate at the front of the stairs, and so sometimes, you know, I'm still in my 30s. I still got some swag. So sometimes I jump over the baby gate from the stairs if I'm feeling myself that day. And so one day I came home. This is actually just a couple weeks ago. And I walk in the house from coming from the office. And Caleb kind of walks up and he's got this like look on his face like he did something. And he's like, the baby gate fell over. And he looks like real serious and kind of nervous. And I'm like, I immediately knew. I'm like, Caleb, did you try to jump over the gate? He goes, yeah, because you do it.
Oh my goodness, I love it.
So it was a funny moment, but in that moment, it just made me realize the little things that you're not even thinking about that either your team sees, your family sees that you're doing in the way that you're showing up, versus like what you're saying. And in that moment, it kind of, it was hilarious, but it scared the crap out of me at the same time, because I'm like, wow, what else am I modeling that I am totally unaware of?
So good, because when you think about the owners that are listening to us right now, do you cut corners in your business? Mm. Do you take a shortcut? Or do you realize that not all money is good money? Mm. What are you modeling for how you run your business? Do you open up your books to your team to say, hey, here's how we make money. Here's how we lose money. Here's why it's important to keep the floors swept and the tables clean and whatever we're doing, because everything speaks. Mm. Everything.
Mm. Thanks for being a supporter of this podcast. The only way this podcast grows is from word of mouth. So if you've gotten one nugget or learning lesson from any episode that we've done, share this with someone who pops in your head that you think will benefit. Imagine the impact you can have by helping them learn something that can build their business. People will associate the value they got from the information from you, the person who shared it with them, all because you shared it with them. I appreciate you and your support. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah. So what are you, I mean, you're on the ground level, you're talking to, meeting with entrepreneurs. Let's take it a step back for a second. How did you come up with the archetypes in the book Resilience? You've got some archetypes. How did you come up with those and label those and tell us who they are?
Yeah. So the archetypes, hurry, worry, ready and steady, plus one, which is curious. I said, how do I speak to individuals and keep it simple where they can grasp in a nanosecond? Hurry and worry show up carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders, and they bring it into your business. So it's important to take time before you start the day to say, how's everyone doing? Mm. Tell us about one good thing that went well. And what you're trying to do is cause that person to spiral up out of whatever they're carrying so that they can move into being ready and steady. So steady is the personality archetype whose superpower is calm. Mm. Whatever happens, steady is just calm. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I understand. How can I fix that? Ready is like, okay, how do I go about solving this problem? It may not be my job, but I'm not going to pass the hot potato on to someone else. If I hear it, I own it. So when I looked at these four personality archetypes, they're sitting by a campfire and they begin to engage, ready and steady, begin to engage hurry and worry in three questions. And these are the three questions that owners and franchisees, you've got to ask your people. What do you want for you? Yeah. We have a business to run, customers to take care of. But what do you want for you? Because if I tap into what's important to you, the customers are going to get what they want because you are my number one customer. So what I've learned over time, even back to my Disney days, leaders, owners create the experience for employees and team members. Mm. Team members create the experience for customers. Customers drive revenue. Reverse engineer. Revenue comes from customers who've been engaged by team members, who've been engaged by an owner or leader that cares about individuals. Mm. So when you ask the question, what do you want for you? What, you want to know what's important to me? Yeah. Then second question, what are you feeling about where you are right now? So I'm honoring you as a human being. And then the third thing is, because we don't run an adult daycare center, what step are you willing to take to get what you want? So that's inviting that person to realize the best hand that will feed you is the one at the end of my wrist. What does management, leadership, ownership want me to do? And because I feel seen, valued, and understood, I'm going to go the extra inch for the customer. Not because I have to, but because I want to. Mm. How did the want to happen? It all started with, I was living in the land of being in a hurry. I was worried. I work for management ownership that is ready and steady, who sees me where I'm at. They meet me where I am, and they invite me through questions to identify what I can do better. Mm. So instead of telling you should do this, you should do that, you're inviting me to be a part of the solution. And I will do it so that I can represent this business in the best possible light.
All right. So can I'm wondering. No, I'm not going to put you on the spot like that. All right. So the one that I related to the most was hurry.
Okay.
Right. Which I think makes sense. You know, a couple years into the business, and it was interesting the blurb that you put in the book about they're always running to the next thing. They have I don't know if it was shiny object syndrome or get rich quick kind of things. Yeah. And I'm reading that, I'm going, wow, that was the first. Especially the first, 7-8 years of me trying to start business after business after business and failing. And tell us a little bit more about hurry.
Yeah. So what's interesting about the personality archetype of hurry, it is about this sense of accomplishment. Like no matter what I've gone through, I got to achieve something. And after experiencing failure, hurry is I'll get the next one. Because I've learned my lesson, and maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but it's always reaching for something. They never want to settle for the status quo. They are their own self-motivator. They don't need anyone to pat them on the back. They will travel the road alone, and they're okay with that because they've developed this nerve and this fiber within them that if I get knocked down, I'm going to get back up again because nobody's going to do anything for me. And sometimes what hurry fails to recognize is that there are signs, that there are little whispers, that if they just paid attention and just made a slight adjustment, they probably would move to more success and they would experience it, but it wouldn't be as fast. It would be at a slower pace. But they're always going, so they're not paying attention. Oh, my goodness, I just got my knee scraped with that last opportunity. Okay, and they're hobbling on to the next one. And they even haven't taken time just to heal, to reflect, to just think, what just happened here? What could I have done better? What if I go and talk to someone and get their take? Because, you know, the old saying, you can't see the picture when you're in the frame.
Yeah.
So hurry, you know, they're like, yeah, I got it. Now, the interesting thing is the hurry personality archetype is a quick study. They can sum things up very quickly because their brain connects dots. They can smell the money. They can see the opportunity. But sometimes that need to achieve outweighs the power of patience and waiting and slowing down to the speed of the moment to say, what's really going on here?
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I hear myself so much in that because just trying to do so many different things in the business. And I've, you know, had to say, especially recently to the team, like, we're trying to do too much. And at the end of the day, that's me like leading the charge in that and driving that. And like, all right, let's slow down for a second. Let's just focus on this. And actually, what was it, last weekend, like we're making changes in the business and the way that we serve the people that we work with. And I'm in my head thinking, how do we do this? How do we do this? And what I realized, I'm like, oh, we survey our clients. And so I spent like two and a half hours just reading through all the surveys, rereading, taking notes on it. And I'm like, here I am trying to figure everything out on my own when it was all there, but in the rush of like trying to find the answer. So what impact does that wind up having then in the workplace as someone who's hurrying, project, like how does that wind up impacting the people around them?
Yeah. So you create more busyness than effectiveness, number one. Number two, it causes some frustration for people who are not wired to Hurry's personality to say, if Hurry would only listen to this particular insight, maybe it will help us in the long run. The other thing is sometimes there's a loss of not only patience and revenue, but a loss of loyal customers who come back time and time again, who are like, you know what? I'm not coming back because this business doesn't get it. They don't see that, hello, this is what I really need. But sometimes we're in a hurry on to the next thing and we haven't taken time to look at the data. The data doesn't lie.
The data doesn't lie. Speaking of data, in kind of talking about resilience, 55% of working Americans would take a slightly lower paying job to work for a manager or leader who inspires brilliance. What does that mean?
That's what we found in our research. So brilliance, when we ask 1,000 people, what is brilliance? They define brilliance as intelligence, confidence, performance. Mm. All right. That's how they defined it. So if 55% of people said they would go and work for a manager that unlocked their brilliance, they want to go and work for a place that boosts their intelligence, their confidence, their ability to solve a problem. And they don't want to work for a manager that blocks their brilliance because that blocks their potential. So when the alarm clock goes off on Monday morning, they're like, I don't want to go work for that guy. I don't want to go work for her because they block me. Or they're like, you know what? I can't wait to get to work because I know they have transferred psychological ownership to me and I can take the business to the next level. I can make suggestions and some of them will be heard and implemented. Others might be tweaked. But do people have a voice? Because here's the deal. When you find your brilliance, you find your joy. Mm. When you find your joy, you find your voice. And when you find your voice, you find your freedom. So freedom is tied to, am I heard? Because if I'm heard, that's my joy of going above and beyond for the business because my brilliance is unlocked.
Mm. So when you say, am I heard? Like what's an example of that? Like what's an example of hearing your employees, hearing your coworkers, hearing your spouse? How does that come to life in the moment?
Great, great question. I'll give you a real-time example. Our team was evaluating an opportunity and I was all gung-ho. I was like, hey, this looks pretty good. Let's make the investment. I said it to one of our team members and I said, hey, can you check this organization out? Do you think this is a viable opportunity that we should pursue? Taylor and our team checked it out and she came back and said, no, I don't think this is a good use of our time, energy, or money. I don't think we should make this investment. And when I realized she did the deeper work, even though I was gung-ho about it, I said, you know what, Taylor? You're right. Let's move on to the next thing. Well, why did I do that? Because I wanted her voice to be heard. I valued her input, and I don't want to waste money. So what I recognized, I didn't need to have all the answers. I just needed to empower her to go and find out, should we or shouldn't we? And when she came back and said, I don't think we should, I'm like, okay, I trust your opinion. We're on to the next thing. Taylor now has voice. I've honored her voice. So now that empowers her to say, the next time I ask the question, she will do the due diligence, she'll do the research, and she'll come back and say, here are the 3 to 5 things to consider. Because her voice is heard. It's not muted. It's not muffled. No, you don't have an opinion. You're part of the team. That's how you unlock voice in an organization.
You know, as you say that, I've thought about all the times where I've unintentionally, kind of going back to self-awareness, unintentionally ignored what someone was saying or overrode it or, you know, asking for someone's opinion and being like, no, I don't want to do it like that or we shouldn't do it like that. And so it's, man, I could see how it can erode culture. I've been in an environment before where it was like, well, like, you ask for my idea, but we never do it anyways, or it's never like implemented. Like how much does that actually come up in the workplace and the feedback you hear is just people wanting to leave and go start their own business because it's just like, man, I've got all these ideas, but like every time I bring it up, nothing happens.
So one of the great organizations that I've done some work for is Whataburger. The Whataburger franchise based out of Texas, what they've done is phenomenal. One of the things they intentionally do is they ask for ongoing feedback from team members as to what are you hearing, what are you seeing, what should we be doing? And it's that feedback that people tee up that the general manager can decide what they will do at that particular Whataburger location. The reason I love this example is because research says 1 minute spent on recognition creates 100 minutes of initiative. So if I take 1 minute to recognize your suggestion, your recommendation as to how we should do something, and I say, you know what? God, that was a great idea. Now you have 100 minutes of initiative to say, how else can I help the business win? All because I took the moment to recognize and to acknowledge that that's a valid point. We should be doing that. Let's go. You're going to look for the other opportunity to make sure the company wins.
Wow. So the word resilient, what does resilience mean? I know you guys defined it in the book. What is resilience?
Resilience, simply put, is to bounce back better. Life is going to happen. Business is going to go south. How do we bounce back better and realize through pattern recognition that we can move through failure and get to success again? So resilience is this ability that in surfing. So one of the things that I'm really excited about, I don't surf, but one day I was in Solana Beach in California with my children, and I see some surfers coming on the beach. And I said, hey, what's the key to surfing? And they said, the moment you hit a wave and you're knocked over, you got to pop back up. Because if you don't pop back up and get back on the board, you're going to be wiped out. Yeah. And I said, oh my goodness, that's resilience at work. You got to bounce back better and wipe out of your mind, that wave just took me out. I got to catch the next wave and ride it in. So it's ability to bounce back better and figure out how do I surf again with what I know where I am. Because the waves of uncertainty, the waves of business is up, business is down, the waves are never going to stop coming. You just have to choose if you're going to be resilient and catch the next wave.
Mm, yeah. And speaking of catching the next wave, I mean, you talked about your entrepreneurial journey and getting rejected by, I think you put like 12 or 13 book publishers,
yeah,
then selling 17,000 books out of the trunk of your car, cashing in your 401k to start your business, taking out a home equity line of credit. So like, what was that journey like for you deciding to go out on your own, start your business and deal with all of that adversity and failure? Because it's easy to, in the moment, to go, okay, yeah, I got to bounce back. But like, what does that moment actually feel like viscerally?
It feels like I am absolutely crazy. I've just lost my mind. I've burned the boats. Like this is, what am I doing? And you sit many times with the story in your head of, okay, that didn't work out. How do I bounce back from this? And how do I keep going? And I think back in my early days, in 21 years of being an entrepreneur, I've reinvented 6 times. And with each reinvention, it was the understanding of, I have a little bit more wisdom. I made a lot of mistakes. I've experienced a lot of failure, but I still love the chase. I love the win. I love who I've become in the process. So after receiving 13 rejection letters from New York and California publishers, and then saying, you know what, I'm going to publish myself and I'm going to straight up hustle, sell out of the back of my truck, I realized you have to discover what Marie Forleo calls figure out ability. So you figure it out, like no matter what. Research says that by the time a child is 17 years of age, they have heard no 150,000 times and only yes 5,000 times.
Wow.
So when I have had the no's, how do I find the yes? I think that's the other thing that's kept me going. And then probably the third thing is, over the years, Tariq, I look at the testimonials and the feedback from people who said, I read your book, I watched your video, I heard you live, and here's what happened in my life. I think in those moments when I wanted to give up, and there have been moments, for me, I start with prayer. I go back to my why. Why did I decide to go into business? Was it for money? Because if it's for money, you ain't gonna be doing it for long. But if it's for meaning and purpose and making a difference in the lives of others, that became the kickstart to get back up again and to keep going. I'll never forget. I was getting into this business deal, and my wife, my then wife, said to me, I don't think you should do it. And I'm like, no, you don't know the numbers. I'm going to do it. I signed the contract, go into business with these folks. And she said, I want to meet them. So we go to lunch and we're sitting there and lunch ends and we're back in the car. She says, I don't know what deal you got in with those guys, but you need to get out of it. And I'm like, why? She says, something is off. I cannot put my finger on it. I'm like, what? Guess what? She was right. I had to hire attorneys to get out of the deal. And what I recognize, I could have totally avoided it if I would have just brought her in a little bit early, says, hey, I don't need you to know everything about the business. Just what's your sense about where I'm at right now? And what I've discovered over 21 years, there were probably a lot of decisions and failures that could have been avoided if I would have asked for input and say, I'm too close to it. I'm like already in, I've written a check, let's go. And if I would have just stepped back, took a quick time out and say, what am I missing? I probably would have saved a lot of money and time. But because of just how I'm wired, like I leave Disney and I'm like, okay, this has got to work because I got something to prove. I got to prove, hey, I can make it without, you know, being a W-2 and getting a regular paycheck. I can make it. And I think that bravado in me of wanting to just push through, I could have avoided a lot of things. But the flip side to that, we've had some incredible wins. We've met some incredible people. We probably have had well over a dozen to a full dozen of people who have become millionaires because of coaching and different things that we've been able to do with them. And when I hear their story, in fact, I was just on the phone last week with a young lady in Ireland who 10 years ago, I said, here's what you need to do. Do this, 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 and this. And she did it. And now she's one of the leading entrepreneurs in all of Ireland. And I'm so proud of her. And she's gotten married and she's got a child. And she says, I'm building out this business. And she said, I just want to thank you. And I said, no, I congratulate you because you did the work. It's one thing to hear. It's another thing to do the work. And so I've got stories like that from people all over the world who just took a little kernel or seed of a thought as I talk about brilliance and resilience, and they made it happen. So when I have those moments of like, what the heck am I doing? I'm like, you know what? That's the fruit. That's the fruit of my work. So we're good.
I love it, man. Now, you were talking about purpose before, and like it's such a cliche statement. Like you got to find your purpose, right? But like, what does that look like, and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah. So one of my mentors, Dr. Miles Monroe, would often say, the greatest tragedy in life is not death. The greatest tragedy in life is to be alive and not know why. I think sometimes purpose is complicated, and I like to simplify it. Purpose is just doing what's in front of you. That's your purpose. Like, can you go out today and help someone who doesn't need anything from you and you don't want anything from them? You just help them. That's your purpose. And what purpose does, when I do what's in front of me, that's a little breadcrumb that leads you to the loaf of bread opportunity that leads you to the bakery. But you got to start with putting one foot in front of the other. So another way to think about your purpose. What makes you come alive? What's the one thing that you would do if nobody paid you to do it? Do that. So for me, at 15 years of age, I went out for football, got cut, went out for basketball. They said, you are not the next Magic Johnson. I got cut. I went out for track and field. They said, my brother, you are too slow. Perhaps try cross country. So I literally was a total failure my freshman year in high school. It was then an English teacher, Miss Rita Lakis, she said to me, young man, I want you to write a speech and give it before the entire school. I said, okay, I did what was in front of me. And here I am now 40 years later because of a teacher who invited me, just write a speech. I did what's in front of me. Now public speaking is like breathing air to me. I don't think about it. Because it was my purpose. Somebody might be listening to us say, oh my goodness, I'm not a public speaker. I can't do that. You know, no, no. I said, no. what's your thing that you can do? Mm. When we look at what Patrick Mahomes has done, okay, he is living his purpose. Who would have ever thunk it that a football player could literally change the course of a game by throwing a ball like a baseball player? But because he loves baseball and football, he just followed his purpose. Mm. And his purpose has led him to 3 Super Bowls. He may just win more Super Bowls than Tom Brady won in his 20 years. Russell has did it inside of 5 years. Now, I'll use him as an example because he did what was in front of him. Mm. But his father was a baseball player. So yep. He's around sports. He picks up a bat. He throws a ball. Someone may be listening to us and I'm not athletic. It's okay. What can you do? That's how you find your purpose. What can you do that's right in front of you?
Yeah, I love the example because for me, for many years, I found myself struggling trying to copy other people and what other people are doing. Like, they're doing it that way, I got to do it that way, instead of trusting what's my own unique gifts and talents. And I've seen it show up in the business recently. And it's those moments of, you and I were talking about the newsletter, before we started recording. And what's interesting, we do a video version of it on YouTube. And because there are some folks out there doing newsletters and they have, they're like, we got 30,000, subscribers or 40,000 subscribers. We don't have that many. We have thousands. But I just thought, what can I do that's unique to me? And I'm like, oh, we can do the newsletter and then I could do a video version of it every week. And we've actually gotten a bunch of new clients from that were like, hey, we watched the newsletter. And like, we really connected. We liked you guys' style and the way that you worked. And I was like, huh, interesting. And it was something that was so kind of easy to execute on, but it's so easy to get caught up in, I don't know, guilting yourself or beating yourself up on like, oh, those people are so good at that. Why am I not good at that? I think it's really interesting. Let's pivot for a second. For someone that's out there right now that is, they're doing well, right? Doing well meaning that they've been able to provide financially for their family. They've reached a certain point either in their career or their business. But behind it all, behind the cars, behind the house, behind the retirement account, they're struggling. They're feeling unfulfilled. Something is missing. What do you say to that person?
Wow. So the first thing I would invite that person to consider, what is missing for you? If you just had to take out a blank sheet of paper, could you write down, what do you want for you? What's missing? Mm. And 9 times out of 10, it might start with them looking at where they are spiritually. Spirituality means different things to different people. So where there is a void after you've had tremendous success, could the void be insignificance, or what does significance look like now? So you got to start there. The second thing is, who knows you really well? Spouse, significant other. When's the last time you've had a heart-to-heart with them to say, you know what? Have achieved a lot, but there's something missing. What do you hear? What do you see? Because they become a mirror for you to reflect back what you don't see or what you don't know about yourself. I think the third thing is, go back into those moments in time when you've had tremendous success. How did it feel? You made the achievement, but what did you do after that? So I'll give you an example. Magic Johnson was being interviewed. And while we look at what Magic has done and a lot of the athletes, how they have kind of transformed into becoming these amazing business people. And Magic Johnson said, you know what? After he had tremendous success, he told his team, let's celebrate for 5 minutes and let's go back to work with purpose. Mm. So he said they would celebrate it, achievement made, then go back to work. So when you have achieved in time past, how did you celebrate? But how did you return to work with purpose? And that work with purpose is not just the business. How did you impact the community? So could this be a point in your business where you say, you know what? we've achieved, how can we help the least, the last, the lost? How can we be a healing presence in our city, in our community, to help those who are not achieving like us? That might mean getting involved with education. That might be going and volunteering at a food pantry or building a community center. There's so many different things that you could look at so that you move beyond what's missing to what difference can I make? Mm. And then for me, everything about me always starts with, who do you call? Who do you pray to? Who do you go to? So I go to the Bible. I start with the Word of God and I prayed. And part of that is because what I recognized, I was at a place in my life where I thought I got all the answers, you know, forget God. I'm just going to do it. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. The breath could be snatched out of my lungs and it is so not about me. I could be gone tomorrow. And I said, wait a minute. Okay. So I had to go back to faith. Do you lean into faith? What does that look like for you? I'm not here to be preachy or anything, but I want to invite you to really look at what does faith mean to you? Mm. Where do you start?
Mm. So powerful. Yeah, so powerful. I remember a few instances just kind of in my life overall, just asking for just guidance, right? And what shows up after that? And it's crazy what happens when you slow down, And yeah, man, that's super powerful. So for anyone who, you know, they don't know Simon, they didn't know he existed before this. So how can they follow you, stay in touch with you? And most importantly, how can they get your new book?
Oh my goodness. Just go to simontbailey.com. T for terrific. I just thought I'd slip it in there.
Nice.
SimonTBailey.com. That's where everything is. And Simon T. Bailey on all social media channels.
Cool, man. What's a last parting message like to folks out there that, you know, they want to live a life where they feel like their cup's full and they're filling up the cup of others? What parting words would you share with them?
Oh, my goodness. I would say, number one, find someone on your team. Write them a handwritten note as to why you appreciate and value who they are and the contribution they make to your business.
Wow.
That I would double down on that.
People handwritten. Still do that? Is that
I know. It's totally old school because everybody's texting. Yeah, exactly.
Is it a pigeon that brings it? Or like
a message in the bottle, you know? But why a handwritten note? It's because most people don't write notes nowadays. Mm. People text, they email, they video. But a handwritten note shows intention, that you took the time to care. Why is Hallmark still around in an AI world? Hallmark is still around because people cherish getting a card for a special occasion or no occasion. Mm. So a handwritten note shows your intentionality to care about another human being. And here's what I can promise you, because I'm guilty. If you write a person a handwritten note, they might move from city to city, state to state. They will keep that note because not because they're pack rats. They will go back to somebody took the time to care about me. Mm. And they took their pen and they wrote from their heart, not just their head.
Wow.
If everyone listening to us can do that for their team members, for a loved one, for their children, what could that matter? Now, there might be some listening, Simon, I'm not in a handwritten notes. Okay. Could you make a personalized video where you just, in a moment, convey to a person, here's why I appreciate you, and send it to them. So why? Why do this? I believe the greatest thing that needs to happen on the planet is we've got to find a way to hug people with our words. We got to hug people with our words. So no matter where they are in life, they know that they are seen, valued, and understood.
Mm. Simon, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate
it. My pleasure.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I appreciate you.
No. Thank you, man. Thank you. So at the event is Ed Milet, Scooter Braun, Mel Robbins, and if I would introduce all of them. And then the night before, they said, hey, one of the speakers will not show up. can you fill the slot in addition to emceeing? You only got 12 minutes. I'm like, okay. So I just did 12 minutes off the cuff, not rehearsed, and Goldcast was in the audience, contacted Success Magazine to say, we want that 3-minute clip of the 12 minutes. Would you allow us to publish it? So Success Magazine reached out to me and said, hey, this is what Goldcast want to do. And I'm like, okay, I didn't have an idea of who Goldcast was or what their intention was. And then the video drops on Father's Day 2018, and my phone is blowing up. Dude, do you see your video? It's gone viral. I'm like, viral? What video? And I went and I looked at the video. It had maybe 15,000 views. Then it climbed to 1 million. Now it's 91 million views. Organic, no boosting, all because of a little story where I just got vulnerable and real in the moment. So that's how that happened. People always think, you know, like I worked the system. Like, no, this just like kind of fell in my lap, you know? So you always got to be ready because you never know. Because I was like, I'm just there to MC and introduce. But then this happened. And yeah, that's how Goldcast came to be.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Goldcast followed up with me probably about a year later to do some additional work with them. And we were going to do it. And then the pandemic hit. So they kind of like reimagined their business and everything. But yeah, great, great folks. Really enjoy working with them.
That's so crazy. It's what's that quote? Is it Henry Thoreau that talks about it's about going from failure to failure and finding success in common hours or something like that?
Uncommon hours.
Uncommon
hours. Yeah, uncommon hours. Yeah.
The fact that wasn't designed to have that 91 million views.
You cannot script that. Like, you cannot say, okay, this is going to happen. This is going to, no, it's like here, I'm just kind of like walking along. And I think that's the entrepreneurial journey. When you are out doing good work and you want to do right by humanity, you have these serendipitous moments where you just bump into things that you could never have imagined unless you were committed to moving forward. So where I was at that time, I had just gone through a divorce. You know, I was trying to get back up on my feet again. I had alimony, 2 kids in college, and I'm just like figuring out, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll come and MC this. And I had burned the boats. So it was like I would never go back to a 9-to-5 job. Like, this had to work. And then that moment just happened. And that moment took us into a whole nother stratosphere that we didn't know existed, all because I said yes. So sometimes you say no to protect your yes, because there will be an opportunity for you to say yes and it's right. And you're like, okay, let's go. You know, and that's that entrepreneurial juice. You're like, yeah, the hard work has paid off. You know, when I'm up 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, nobody's around and I'm just writing and thinking, getting ready for moments like that.
That's crazy.
You can never make up.
It reminds me of the, you know, Eric Thomas?
Yeah.
It reminds me of Eric Thomas when he talks about him blowing up was, I guess, that video about, you know, with him talking to the kids and, you know, if you want to be successful as bad as you want to breathe. And apparently he said that video was dead. It was dead. It was on YouTube for years. And all of a sudden, randomly, it picked up steam and then started going viral. And that launched his success. And it's like, wow. That is like, it's almost like that is the epitome of resilience. I see resilience in that. Because all the days you could quit, all the days you could give up, and it's like you randomly show up, you're just kind of doing your thing, not expecting anything. Yep. And then that's when magic happens.
Yep. So you got to stay the course. Because it's so easy to quit and say, the heck with this, what am I doing? But you keep going, you know, and you have those moments. So, yeah. Man.
Hey, before we go, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I put my heart and soul into providing you value through this podcast to help you build your empire. So please subscribe if you haven't already. And the biggest thank you you could ever give me is to drop a review, because more reviews equal this podcast getting more listens, which means we can share this message with more people and hopefully positively inspire them like we have you. You can also share it with someone you care about that you believe may benefit from listening. Thank you. And until next time, go build your empire.